You're listening to KXRY Portland on 107.1 FM, 91.1 FM, and streaming online at xray.fm. I'm Sarika Mehta. Welcome to Intersections Radio, a new independent podcast, which also airs on X-Ray. Intersections Radio is the show where we geek out on all things intersectionality. The last time I met author Naomi Munavera, we talked about the many challenges in publishing her first novel, Island of a Thousand Mirrors. This includes the publishing industries of both South Asia and the U.S., and the controversial insight of the Sri Lankan War. This time, she came back to Portland to talk about her second novel, What Lies Between Us. This is an intimate portrayal of motherhood and how the lasting effects of war impact our relationships. The story starts with the backdrop of an unexpected, violent act, but still serves as a powerful, addictive read. Naomi Munavera and I met up at Powell's City of Books, and we chatted about the process of writing the second novel, What Lies Between Us. We also talked about the nation of Sri Lanka as it heals from a lengthy ethnic war and finds its voice again, in part through literary arts. This is Intersections Radio. Naomi Munavera, thank you for coming back to Portland, and congratulations on the success of your second book, What Lies Between Us. So you had your Powell's event last night. We're at Powell's now. How did things go?
Oh, it was so amazing. I was here with a local writer, Paul Stotonghi, and we had an incredible conversation. It was very, very good. The book's been out for about a week, actually exactly a week now, and I've been doing a bunch of events in the Bay, and then I'm here today. I did an event here at Powell's yesterday, going off to Seattle tomorrow, and then some things in LA. But it's just great, and it's really fun to have a second book out and be back here again. Yeah.
What are some of the differences in the tour of your debut novel and this one? Like, because I remember one thing I remember about last year or the first book tour is that you said that you fund it yourself.
Oh, that's still the case. And that it's not a terrible problem. I mean, this is the thing. I was on the radio in the Bay Area a couple of days ago, and the host said, you know, back about 10 years ago, the publishing houses would send all these people, all these writers, and they would like totally pay for it and all of that. And those glory days are kind of gone, so I miss them. I don't mind too much. I mean, it's not that expensive of a ticket to get out here. I'm trying to get my ticket to New York paid for, but you know, I'm staying in people's houses and all of that, and I'm just thrilled that people are coming out and reading this book, and it seems to really resonate with the people that have read it. So that's really thrilling to me.
Tell me the synopsis of your second novel, which again is called What Lies Between Us.
So the second novel is, it's about a woman who has done a very terrible thing. She's committed a terrible crime, and she's actually in jail, and the book is her confession. So in the course of her confession, she will take you through everything that has brought her to this point. And really, it's a book that explores the impact of childhood trauma upon an adult life.
As compared to the previous book, what are some of the challenges or benefits that you experienced in writing this story?
You know, the first book, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm a self-taught writer. I don't have an MFA. I hadn't ever taken a fiction class. I had studied literature as a graduate student and somebody who was getting their PhD. And so when I started writing fiction, I really sort of taught myself how to do it. It wasn't something that I knew how to do. There was a lot of stumbling in the dark. There was a lot of not being sure if I was actually writing a book. You know, I started writing in 2001, and the book didn't find a publisher till 2011 or 12. So, you know, part of that, of course, was like finding a publisher. But the early parts of it was very much about sort of stumbling around in the dark. What is this? Am I writing this for myself? Am I writing a novel? And then, oh my God, I'm writing a novel. It's about the civil war in Sri Lanka. And really not knowing what the hell I was doing for a long time and teaching myself how to write. I think that first book was very much about teaching myself how to write. The second book, actually, I have to say, it came more easily to me because I knew what I was doing in two ways. I knew that I was writing a novel. And then secondly, I just sort of knew how to do it, do the work. I knew how to be disciplined about it. And so the writing of it, I would say in just logistical terms, was easier. Now, of course, like you've read the book, you know, the subject matter isn't easy. So, right. Yeah. So emotionally, again, it was a difficult book to write, perhaps more difficult than the first one to write. The first one is about the civil war in Sri Lanka. It's about two women going through that conflict. But it's a little bit removed because you do have the situation of war. So that the war is sort of a main character in the book. Also, in this book, it's a really deep, intense psychological look at one character. So we're in her point of view and we're in her skin and her life the whole way through. And it's, I think it's a more intimate book. I mean, it's like a second child. I'm not saying I like it more, but, I do believe it's a more intimate book. And so what that means is then I have to sort of take on the persona. For me, like, writing is somewhat like method acting. So I take on that personality and I like live in her skin and have to make decisions about, okay, like, what would she do in this situation? What is she doing now? And I have to like really take that on and then write that scene. Some of these like very difficult scenes, and then write them over and over again to get it perfect, to get it right. So yeah, it was a difficult book to write. And then of course also I like, writing is the most joyful thing I do. So also a really joyful, ecstatic thing to do.
It's interesting what you were saying before about these are like your two children and you don't know which one you love more, but this was definitely in some ways a more intimate story, because that's how I felt. I read both of the books, you know, in like the same week. Okay. And, you know, one has a bit, is more connected to the Civil War, and the other one is more like one person's experience as a result of the Civil War, even though they both kind of have that impact. And what is interesting, at least for me personally, I found it easier to digest the first book than the second one. But then what does that say when it's easier to digest a story about a war rather than a person's very difficult experiences with these intimate relationships in marriage and motherhood and things like that?
Wow, that's such a good observation. Yeah, you know, the first book is about a literal civil war in Sri Lanka. The second book is, I refer to it as the smaller war, which is going on in the home, which is going on in the family. But it's just as devastating in certain ways. I mean, you know what happens to my character. So it's just as devastating. And I think that the book about the war is something that a lot of immigrant writers have to grapple with. The first book is like, you have this real desire or itch to tell this, you know, quote unquote, the story of your people, which it's not the story of my people. It's one story of what happened to certain characters in Sri Lanka. So I'm not claiming it's like the Sri Lankan story at all. But it, you know, the impetus was to try and explore what it meant to be American, to be living in America while this was happening in Sri Lanka. There was this grappling with like, what does it mean to have a war in your home country? So there's a certain distance in that. Although when you know, I think when you're reading the first book, you don't feel that distance. But then perhaps when you compare it to the second book, it's like, oh, wow, this one. Okay, it's just her. It's just her talking. And you're just like in her life and in her skin. So there's no outside. I mean, there's an outside threat, but it's quite different. It's very, very internal.
And speaking of this, like you were saying, you know, we wear her skin throughout the story, and she's narrating the whole story, the entire novel, and we don't know her name until the very, very, very end. What was the impetus behind that choice?
Well, you know, in the beginning of the book, she says, you think that you know me and you think you know my crime, but you don't, and you're not going to know it until you like listen to everything I've said. So it's, the end is her just saying like, okay, here I am, like, now you know the whole story and here's my name. So this is like your reward for listening to me through the whole thing. And I think it's a name that just does ring. I mean, it has multiple meanings, but it is, I think it's the right name for that character. You get there and you're like, oh, right. Of course, that makes total sense. I mean, I hope you had that feeling. Okay, good. Yeah, so it's a little like reward for thank you for listening. And I mean, I was really interested. I'm really interested in these characters that in real life, we hear those stories on the news or, you know, in TV or whatnot. And we go, oh, my God, I cannot imagine, like, what would make someone do that? I would never do that. That's impossible to understand. In the first book, the character I did that with is Saraswati, who eventually, hopefully this is not a spoiler because the book came out some years ago, but she becomes a suicide bomber for the Tigers. And with that book, I was really interested in what would make a woman do that. I mean, it's unimaginable to me that someone would strap bombs on themselves and blow themselves up in a busy place, kill other people, kill themselves. But then, you know, if you like take a look back at what's going on in the villages or in her childhood, it becomes very clear, and it really becomes... it was very evident to me that in similar circumstances, I or anybody else would do exactly the same thing. So really, it's a matter of humanizing these people. And again, with her and the particular crime she commits, it's the kind of thing that you're like, oh my God, I cannot imagine that. That's impossible. What's wrong with these people? And then if you follow it back, the cases in real life, you're like, oh yeah, okay, they were asking for help almost in childhood or in high school, and they just didn't get that help. So I wanted to follow that story back and see where did it begin, and can I write a story in which I make the reader empathize with what is really almost impossible to imagine.
Is that what inspired this particular story, was hearing these stories on the news of, in the first case, or that is to say in the first book, like you were saying, there was a suicide bomber, is, without revealing much about this story, you know, is that what inspired the story, was somebody on the news?
The first book, Island of a Thousand Mirrors, no, it wasn't actually a suicide bombing. I'm Sri Lankan, but I grew up in Nigeria and then in Los Angeles. But we would go back to Sri Lanka for about a month every year. And so I grew up with the war as the backdrop to my life. I mean, in Sri Lanka, we had this war from 1983 till 2009, so 26 years of long civil war between the Sinhala army and the Tamil Tigers of Elam, and the death toll from that war was 80 to 100,000 people. So I was really interested in what does it mean to be growing up in safety while that is happening in the background of my life. And it wasn't one particular headline, but, you know, growing up in L.A., you know, the BBC would come on the radio and they would talk about suicide bombing in Sri Lanka, or we would go to Sri Lanka. We went to Sri Lanka all through the war years, and you see it. You see people afraid, or you can't go out at night, or you get stopped on the way to somebody's house from the airport, like so many times, by soldiers with guns. And we were safe because we had American passports. We were really protected. But I kind of grew up in that milieu, and I was interested in like exploring the entire thing. There's this great quote that I just heard, which says, "Every pearl is an autobiography of its oyster." And I think that really rings true for all kinds of art. It's that piece of grit that gets into you and like really irritates you, and you have to keep thinking about it and like coating it in mucus, which is what the oyster does to sort of make this work of art. But it's like this long-term grappling with this annoying thing, this irritating thought that won't go away. So with the first book, it was, you know, what's my own relationship to this war? With the second book, it was a little bit more, I think it was more conscious. Like, I want to write a book about a woman who has done something really terrible, and what are the and also like follow that back and say, what would have caused this action to happen?
That was something I appreciated about both of these books, that even though the main characters are involved in pretty treacherous acts, that you bring a lot of humanity, because nobody is that two-dimensional and we need to understand their backstories. I want to ask a couple of questions that are not directly about the book, but kind of about you and your relationship with the literary world. You had written a piece, I think, for Lit Hub about your experience at the Gaul Literary Festival, about the idea of a literature healing a nation. Can you talk about that? Because that was a very powerful piece.
Thank you. So the Gaul Literary Festival takes place in Sri Lanka every year. And it has been, I think, for 8 years now. We had a gap of 3 years, but it's back on. And it's amazing. It's this year they had 95 writers from all over the world, and they come to Sri Lanka, and we had the festival in three different cities. We had it in Gaul, Kandy, and Jaffna. And it's you know, it was the first time I was there as a writer, and it was tremendous to be there, to be in Sri Lanka, which it is now in the process of healing from this 26-year-long war. And it was so incredible to be there with writers all over the world and to say our legacy is not only war, but also engagement with international literature. We're starting to tell our stories. That's really important. And as I wrote in the piece, so we started off in Galle, and the big festival was in Galle. So we had the 94 writers there, tons of events, packed halls. I mean, in a way that isn't very common, I have to say, in America, but people are very engaged with literature in South Asia. We have the Jaipur Festival and all kinds of festivals all over South Asia. And then the second part of the festival that I participated with, we actually took six writers to the north. We went to Jaffna, which for most of the war, for many decades, was closed off from the rest of the country because there was active fighting up there. So in my growing up, it would have been easier to go anywhere in the world except Jaffna because it was cut off. You couldn't get in. People were fighting. People were dying up there. And it was amazing. Like, we took our literary festival to Jaffna. We're staying in a hotel. I mean, this war just ended in 2009. So the hotel we stayed in had just been finished like 2 weeks before. We're having the festival at the Jaffna Library, which has... which at some point in the 80s was 81, I believe, it was burnt down. It's been rebuilt. And we were there, and what really got to me is there were many questions from both Tamil people and Sinhala people about, are you going to tell our story? How do we tell our story? And this is new. This is not something that in my opinion, Sri Lankans haven't been comfortable talking about it or attempting to write about it. So the fact that people are now asking the writers, are you going to write about this place? Are you going to write about what happened to Sinhalese people, to Tamil people? That's really powerful. The other part of this is I'm part of a writing program called Write to Reconcile, which happens once a year in Sri Lanka. And it's led by Shyam Selvadre, who's an amazing Sri Lankan writer. He's internationally known. And Shyam and I do this program where we pick 24 youth. This year it's going to be 24 youth from the country, so Tamil, Sinhala, Muslim, and then 10 from the diaspora. We lead them in writing exercises. We conduct two residential workshops. This year it's going to be in Anuradhapura, which is the Sinhala border villages, and then up in the Vani, which is Tamil border villages. So really what we're trying to do is collect stories of what happened during the war and attempt to heal some of that trauma through writing. And I do believe writing is like just incredibly important to healing trauma because, you know, you're getting the story down on the page, you're getting it out of your body. Every year we gather these stories, we work on them, and we put out an anthology. You can find it at writetoreconcile.com. And, you know, they've even, like, in other places, they've done studies about how people that write about things like surgery, they actually recover faster. So there's, like, you don't just feel good. It's, like, literally a physical act of healing to write about something traumatic. And that's something we're really trying to facilitate.
Yeah, that's amazing. You were talking about these people who attended the festival who were saying, are you going to write about our stories, whether they were Tamil or whether they were Sinhalese? And I think you even had some very specific quotes from people there. And as a Sri Lankan American, especially attending this festival and being in contact with people who survived the war, how do you cope with that? What do you do with that?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we had a young Tamil guy, Shyam and I did a session, and we had young Tamil guy stand up at the end and say, you know, everybody died here. You're in Jaffna. You know, we stood in line from 3 a.m. to 3 p.m. to get a bag of rice. And it was so terrible. Like, are you going to write about us? And we had to say, you know, that's so terrible. And thank you for telling your story. I don't know that I can write your story because when I'm confronted with him, I don't have the right authenticity. I did write a book about the war, but when I talk to somebody who's from there, I mean, his story is going to be more real and authentic than mine. So I have to say to him, like, we want to hear from you. How do we make that happen? And I do think it was a young writer. And the next day in Rohini Mohan's panel. She's an amazing nonfiction writer. She wrote about the conflict also. A young Sinhalese woman stood up and said, I'm from the southern villages. Who are you going to tell my story? So, you know, we can't tell their stories. We can only tell the stories that we are called to tell, but we're doing our best to facilitate them telling their stories.
And then my other question is the other extreme. You had also written a piece about you and your spouse have decided to not have children, but you publicly announced it in the same fashion that people might announce pregnancy or the birth of a new child or something. At least that's what I understood on Facebook. And I felt that was a very powerful parallel that you both had chosen. What's interesting to me is that your book is so intimately telling the story of motherhood. And I'm wondering, for your writing process and you can't separate yourself from what you do. So how did you feel going through the process of writing this book with that backdrop?
Right. I wanted people to understand that I'm not attacking motherhood at all. Like, in fact, there's a part in the early part of the book where I'm really pointing out that it's not mothers, it's the pressure on mothers. And it's the fact that in America, from what I'm noticing, is there just isn't a lot of support for mothers. You know, in South Asia, when a woman in Sri Lanka, I should talk specifically about Sri Lanka. Traditionally, when a woman's having a baby, you go to your mother's house and she takes care of you for like 3 to 6 months. I think this is true in India too. You don't do any work, you don't do any housework, you don't cook, you just get taken care of and you're pampered and your body is taken care of. And then even after you have the baby, it's another 3 months of absolute caretaking. And of course, when you compare that with America, it's like night and day. And really what I wanted to point out is, like, in America, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of support for these women. You know, there's no family, there's no, the government's certainly not helping. You know, there just isn't any support. So that's what I was taking on. I'm not a mother, but of course fiction is, the whole project of fiction is to empathize and connect with people who are not you. And the thing about not choosing to have children, I think what you're referring to, so I've been with my partner for 9 years now, and we got married about 6 months ago, so we're newlyweds. And thank you. So about 3 months ago, we've been talking about this for quite a while, and neither of us were really drawn to children. And I think if you are going to have children, this is something that you absolutely have to desire with all your heart. And I know how hard it is. I'm watching my sister with my beautiful niece that I love. And it's just something that you have to pour your body and soul into. And this is not something that called to us in that way. So we chose not to. And my husband actually had a vasectomy a couple of months ago. And on Facebook, he posted and he said, we've decided this and we honor all the parents in our life. But we also want to point out that this is sort of just as important a life choice as choosing to have children. And it was actually, the response was really positive. You know, tons of people were like, wow, you're right. That is amazing. That is a valid choice and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, this is, I think it's becoming just as valid to say, I'm going to spend my life doing something else. So, yeah, all of that.
No, I really liked that. I thought that was a very powerful, the other side of the coin. And I'm sure that, you know, you experience from other people a lot of either pity or just something with the eyes that are judgmental.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we live in the Bay Area, so, which is not necessarily a child-friendly place. You know, it's very hipster and young, like, everyone is really young. And so it's a strange place in that way, because, like, when I go to other places, like, children are much more normal. They're much more part of life and conversation. And I mean, that's probably a part of the reason it doesn't sort of fit into our lifestyle, which sounds terrible. Children don't. Yeah, you're just honest, you know, like, I think our energy is going into other projects. I'm also a person that doesn't have a ton of energy, so I just know that it would be children or writing, and the writing called to me much more. And I know, like, there are plenty of writers who are mothers, and I totally respect that, and I think that's amazing. You know, whatever people want to do, whatever women want to do, I'm totally thrilled for them. I'm not making any statements about what you should or should not do with your body, what you should or should not do with your fertility. It's just really up to the person.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the bulk of the questions I wanted to ask. Is there anything that you want to add, any last remarks or takeaways you want for our listeners?
I mean, I'm doing a ton of publicity for this book, of course, and then I'm going back to Sri Lanka in May to teach Write to Reconcile with Shyam. And then I'm also, you know, dabbling with a new book. So it's a little bit too early to talk about it, but there's definitely something in the works.
Okay, so you're just going to keep us in suspense. Naomi Munavira, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here at Powell's, and thank you for supporting Intersections Radio.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
That was author Naomi Munavira talking about her second novel, What Lies Between Us. To learn more and to listen to the podcast of this interview, check out intersectionsradio.wordpress.com. Visit the same website for previous episodes of this podcast. And join the Facebook community at facebook.com/intersectionsradio. I'm Sarika Mehta, and this has been Intersections Radio. Thanks for listening.